In this week, on the 6th of February 1988, with the FA Cup fifth round draw the previous Monday pitting the two sides together, it was inevitable that a first division match between Wimbledon and Newcastle United would end goalless, with neither team prepared to take a risk going for the kill. Post-match, a picture of a snarling Vinnie Jones squeezing Paul Gascoigne's crown jewels went around the world and confirmed many of the prejudices people held about the Dons and their approach to the game. Ah, grabbing life by the horns is what we're all about. With the same old Wombles, we're back.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. Traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth. If we win or we lose, we just go on.
Welcome, dear listener, possibly listeners, to the show. I'm Matt Cooper, and today I'm joined by Mor Frere and the CEO of Fair Game, Niall Cooper. All right, Niall?
I like the fact you've given me a title. That's quite nice. Thank you, Matt. Yes.
That's right. And so it progresses. And the man with the buttons, Dr. Professor Adam Proctor. Hi, Adam. You okay?
I'm fine, other than we're recording this on a Friday. So I want to go to sleep.
Surely that's not a Friday attitude. And finally, the stat man himself, the football guru, the man that is tall Mark Lewis. Hello, Mark. How are you, mate?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. And to answer Adam's question straight away, if we recorded it on our usual Monday slot, then we would have done it before Port Vale and been really angsty about what's going on. If we'd recorded it on Tuesday, then it would have been during the Port Vale game. If we'd recorded it on Wednesday, then we would miss the meeting.
Yes.
So
exactly.
The fact you lot couldn't do last night is you know, your own fault.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Mark, we were there. You and I could have done it.
Absolutely. Adam will still, of course, have this out before the game on Saturday, so we can do a mini Reading preview.
Yeah, it's exciting. So, anyhow, listen, let us first talk football. Let us talk Port Vale. And I got to say, we felt it keenly against Doncaster. There's nothing worse than a last-minute defeat. But equally, there's nothing better than a last-minute winner. And it was fantastic. I was looking at the stats. It seems again like we had control of most of the first half. In the second half, it was more Port Vale. And am I right, Mark? I'm coming to you because you'll know this more than anyone. Does this seem like we've got yet another system in place?
No. Well, no. I think we played a straight 3-5-2. The only tweak to the system is that it appears that we chose not to bring Lewis back in, even though he was available. He wasn't even on the bench. So I hope he's obviously fit, because there's been no mention of him. And the pre-match preview for Jackson has literally just come out as we started recording tonight. There's no mention there of him not being available. So he played Seddon left of a back three, which is similar to what he did on Saturday, actually, to be fair. And therefore, Nkeng was again, featured from the start, but featured from the start as a wing-back, which we know he's not, which will stymie what he's capable of achieving. But no, it was the same. Otherwise, other than that, it was the same kind of idea of a formation. And I think, again, even when they made the changes came in like for like. What the changes did, however, achieve is that if you have three in the middle of midfield, one of them should always be able to break beyond the forward, which is exactly what Maycock managed to do for the winner.
Yeah, and it was and a great ball by Smudge into Maycock. Found loads of space in the box. Probably not the greatest defending from them, but who cares? And a very calm finish.
The fundamental difference is he chose not to play Reeves from the start.
Yeah,
and even though the game was tight, he chose not to bring Reeves on. He brought on attacking options.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know whether that's a mindset change or desperation change or whatever you'd call it, but that in itself is a positive thing because, as we'll come on to later, whichever combination we have up front in terms of strikers throughout the whole season, we haven't managed to hit on one that consistently will bring goals. And that's obviously been our Achilles heel all campaign.
We've skipped a game, though. We've skipped a game. Like we've got.
Oh no, no, Adam. Adam, we've done this deliberately, mate. There's so much going on. We don't talk about defeats. If we've got an option, we won't talk about last Saturday. So
it was all the subs.
It's finished. Move on from it. Do you know what I mean?
I think last Saturday
was so long time ago.
Genuinely, I would say Bolton were the best team we played this season for the first half.
Oh, yep.
For the first half, apart from Cardiff. And then second half, we actually got to grips with them. But, I mean, first half, they had Apta and the guy who scored the winner, Blackett Taylor, who both of whom have just come straight online from the Championship. And obviously against them, we've got an 18-year-old in King, who we're all pinning loads of hopes on. So I think that shows you your contrast in resources.
And King is looking great.
Adam, you see that bit that happened there? That was your fault.
I know.
At no point in my agenda have I got last Saturday's game on this.
You've
on
got
this
an agenda? Blimey.
Mate, I've got
he
a,
always
I've
has
got
an agenda. I know he has an agenda.
There.
Yeah, he definitely has an agenda. It's not a written down one. He's just
I'll
an agenda.
What, my agenda is don't talk about defeats. I'm surprised we've had so many podcasts, to be honest.
I thought we were lucky to get... we went through all that 20-game run when we didn't win a game. And we managed to do a podcast every week. I thought we were lucky to be 1-0 down at half time, actually. And there were some games to come over. I mean,
hold on, stop.
Adam.
Stop.
Adam.
Matty had a rule.
No, but that's the point of our podcast. No, we do have to talk about football.
Yeah, we are. We're talking about the Port Vale game, my friend. Admittedly, none of us were at Port Vale.
Yeah, none of us saw it, so I don't even know what's happened.
I think you have to take both of them in context, though, because we ran for so. I mean, I thought Maycock was very unlucky to be dropped. After probably being one of our brighter players against Port Vale, against Bolton. Actually, what he did against Bolton is a lot of pressing and not a lot of actual creation. That's the problem. We're not creating things, whoever we play against. Having said that, mixing the team up made a lot of sense. As I said, not starting Reeves after, again, you know, he substituted in the last couple of games and apparently the pitch wasn't in any way conducive to decent player passing football at Port Vale. But I think, frankly, we owed Port Vale owed us one after that game last year, which three out of the four of us went to, where we deserved the whole win, and we actually got 3-2 defeat.
And also, just to go back a little bit, Adam, in terms of why we didn't record on Monday, because Monday was also transfer deadline day. And if we'd have recorded at our normal time, we'd have missed the news that we've actually brought someone in, a striker. Leighton Stewart. Now, our understanding...
Leighton never.
Our understanding is that he's been someone we were looking at previously.
We're looking at people previously. We're probably looking at people all the time. That's a load of nonsense.
Yeah, well, that's what Kofi said. So, you know, and FC Thurn, who he plays for in Switzerland, they're top of the league, and so they're beating, like... you know, quite well-known sides in Europe, like Grasshoppers and Basel. So so he can't get in. He's not getting into their squad, I don't think, at the moment, although he did start at the beginning, then had an injury. So he's coming back and he's got something to prove, which, you know, I don't think we can criticise anyone because we didn't know anything about Ahmadi, did we? There's a long, and you know, like some of them succeed and some of them don't. And who knows? But we can't judge someone on them not being in our side at all. It does bring up an interesting question, one we've spoken about, which is, you know, we seem to have a lot of strikers, although not many people scoring at the moment. And also, it's arguable whether Bugle or Brown are actually strikers.
Do you want my striker analysis now or later?
Yeah, come on, mate. Go on there.
Okay, so I've clearly got far too much time on my hands.
You really have. We all have, yeah.
And I actually managed to do something which even apparently the Womble coefficient hasn't managed, because I actually saw Tim at the meeting and talked to him about this. And he said that he hadn't looked into this. So what I did, making the assumption that although Brown isn't really a striker, on a number of occasions we've played Brown with another striker, so it looks like we've got a front two. I did an analysis of all the league games this season. And here's a quick question for you, first and foremost. How many different combinations up front do you think, any of you think, we've had in the, what, 26 league games we've had, however many league games this season?
I could do this if I go back through the email you sent earlier on. I'm
Yeah,
going to
I've
say,
told you all,
I would
but
say, I don't
without
know. I mean,
looking at it,
without
I
looking at
didn't
it,
look at an email. I didn't even see it.
No, it was WhatsApp, but not an email.
WhatsApp?
Um, six, six, seven. I'm
Six
going
or
with
seven,
eight.
says Matt. Niall's going eight.
Yep.
Adam's
Well, he's got
guessing
to be, isn't he?
completely.
Yeah, of course I'm guessing. I'm interested in your anal what your analysis methodology is, but beyond that, I'm going for lower
Jesus, touch
numbers,
the
like
academic.
four, six, yeah,
Four.
six,
Okay.
yeah.
Well, you're all wrong. The answer's nine. My methodology is who played up front, how many games did they play together up front, and how many goals did those strikers score? Not did the team score, but did those strikers score in the games they played together? Okay. So Luton started the season. Stevens played on his own up front and didn't score. So one game, no goals, no win. We lost 1-0. A lot of the time, I know that it feels like when Brown's playing, it's not really a second striker, but I've counted him as a second striker for the analysis. So Stevens and Brown played eight games together, scored seven goals between them in those eight games, which has resulted in three wins. Stevens and Orsi, one game, no goals, no wins. That was Cardiff at home. Bugle and Stevens, three games, two goals, three wins. Bugle and Orsi, four games, two goals, one win. Bugle and Brown, six games, four goals, three wins. Third of which, obviously, was Port Vale the other night. Brown and Orsi, three games, two goals, no wins. Stevens and Sasu. And Brown and Hackford, one game, no goals, no wins. So, first of all, that shows you how many crazy formations or configurations we've had. But actually, the common denominator, as you imagine, there is Brown.
And what's the most successful partnership?
Well, it's split. There's three of them. So Stevens and Brown, eight games, seven goals, three wins. Bugle and Stevens, three games, two goals, three wins. And Bugle and Brown, six games, four goals, three wins. So it's
Well,
probably Stevens and
it's not
Brown.
split. It's not split, is it? Bugle appears in twice. Sorted.
So does
That's all.
Brown.
What are you judging him?
Oh my
Exactly. What are you
giddy.
judging
Oh
him at?
my. Oh my
Goals
giddy
per
arm.
game, wins, you know?
The obvious solution is. Gamble, play all three.
Yeah, exactly. Free up front, blimmin' heck, that'd be
Bugle,
mad.
well, I mean,
Bugle,
like,
Brown, Stevens.
well, surely, I mean, like, Bugle and Stevens with Brown behind would, at the top of a diamond, a four diamond might be a thing. Not that that will ever happen, but anyhow, that's it. Here we go. But the point is, we got a well-needed win on the road,
No, is it
which was
we and well,
fantastic.
we had to win that game. We had to win that
You
game.
know what?
I mean, there's
I
been a
don't
lot
think
of
we
we've
did
had
need
to win
I don't
games.
think we did need did have to win that game.
Oh,
I
come on,
think
they're bottom of the table. Like, at
yeah,
this
I know
point, we
that. I
needed
know
the
that. And
points.
therefore, if you can't beat Port Vale, who can you beat? But
Why
my
not?
logic would be actually we just played the bottom three when we played them in Rotherham, where we just about got a draw, in Doncaster, where we helped them back up the table by conceding a last minute defeat, and obviously the win over Port Vale. So
But the mood would have massively changed had we not win. I think we discussed
I
the fact
agree.
that we were going to lose.
I was
I
just
mean,
going to say it was about not losing rather than
yeah,
necessarily winning.
I felt it was not losing. But when that goal went in, it was just like it was just such a relief. I didn't even know what to do because we haven't done it for such a long time. And I'm
Our
hoping it's not just like,
WhatsApp blew up.
there was lots of WhatsApp whooping. Yeah, absolutely.
It was no, that was truly fantastic. And it was on it embodied. But going back to the start of the month, I wonder what our par would have been, facing Doncaster at home, Rotherham and Port Vale away. What would be, I think this is the minimum. I think 4 points is the minimum
Yeah.
that we would have accepted. I think we'd have looked for,
Six.
six.
But I know, but the thing is, I know we're going to probably get onto this. As far as I understand it, at the Don's Trust meet the board meeting, whatever it's called, they talked about the number of points that they expected us to have by this point in the season, and we seem to be on track. We just gained a bunch of those earlier than we expected. So I think it's.
Yeah, I don't think
Yeah.
Craig gave an actual number. Craig
No, he
gave his
didn't.
sort of introductory spiel, and he essentially said that, Adam, but essentially said he didn't expect us to have got them in the pattern that we got them.
No. I mean, it's so, it's just great. And I think, I mean, listen, the one thing you did talk about was Ninkeng feels like a new signing. Obviously, our two loan signings have done brilliantly. Or Jackson, I think, seems like he's getting into it, so he's playing well. And although both Niall and I were slightly dismissive of the fact we got Tilly back, I've got to say, I think he's been exceptional. For me, I almost would say he'd been my player of the match last Saturday.
He
I
looked
thought he
great.
was
He looked
I
great.
thought he looked great, and he looked really hungry. So I think that's a great thing. As we slowly edge into the board thing, the first thing was Craig Cope, but he I
Can
thought
I
was
just
quite.
correct you for actually naming Nelson, the loanee from Luton, as Jackson?
Yeah,
You
mate,
got that right, sorry.
you wanna, Mark. If you didn't correct me every minute, it wouldn't be our podcast.
Sorry, mate.
But so slowly moving into it, because I think there was it was quite interesting what Craig was saying. But first, before I get into that, what we'll do is we'll take it in sections, the meet the board. So Craig Cope, James Woodroof, and the meet the board. We'll sort of like go into each of those sort of things. And there's a lot to get through, but fear not, dear listener. We're not going to overrun, mainly because Niall's got to disappear off. But firstly, I was managed to watch online, and I watched the whole thing, so it was quite interesting. I would love to have been there, but it just wasn't possible. Mark, you were in the room,
I
and I
was.
just wanted to know what did you feel overall? What did you think the vibe in the room was like?
I think, to be fair, it was quite sensible and level-headed. I mean, I was also in the room for the infamous meeting at the end of Jackson's first season, where we almost got relegated out of League Two, and Mick started talking about his dog and so on, and that was toxic. And I think with the rumours, spurious or otherwise, that had been floating around, people were thinking the same thing could happen. People did raise some of those. I felt that all the people that spoke from the club's perspective and from the DTB and club board's perspective were well prepared and well organised. They're used to these things, and they don't, which in very simple terms is positive, because it means that these people will come across in a professional way, which obviously helps because they're the people who are running our club. I didn't feel that there was, people getting on the high horse or necessarily thinking, hang on, this is all complete rubbish. I think in very simple terms, it feels to me, and I know this is a massive generalization, but it feels to me that there are obviously groups of fans of different opinions. The group of fans that are well in favour of fan ownership, the group of fans that are definitely in favour of selling out, and the vast majority of people that are somewhere in the middle. And I've been to many, many Don's Trust meetings, and obviously been on the board when there's been meetings as well. And there's probably been 40, 50 people in the room. There were probably 200 plus in the room.
It was packed.
And it was packed.
Yeah.
And there weren't people muttering, going, oh my God, he doesn't know what he's talking about type thing. There were some very sensible, convivial conversations with people, and then people had conversations afterwards as well. So, in that respect, it was very respectful, it was very sensible. I mean, they gave out bits of information about their plans financially and about the way in which the club is tracking with regards to sponsorship revenue and so on and so forth. So we're very, forthcoming in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was it felt like people weren't getting angry. There was some, that there were some questions that were more provocative than others. But like you say, Mark, I think people dealt with it calmly, and I think there was a lot of respect in the room, which was really, really nice. And Adam.
No, I just want to say one thing, which I think is that I don't agree with what Mark said, is that I don't think the majority of people are in the middle ground. I think the majority of people want us to be fan owned, and there is a loud minority that want us to sell out. I don't think there's a middle.
Possible.
I think there's a small middle ground potentially, but yeah, I don't think that's the majority. Yeah. I think the majority.
I think I think that middle. I think what you've got is you've got people. I mean, if you wanted to really split it, you've got people who want to stay pure fan owned. There are people who want to sell out, and then there's a lot of people in the middle who are like interested in this 50. 50.
Oh, that's not, that doesn't mean I'm interested in the 50.1. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not in the middle. Yeah. Yeah. I'm on the hardcore fan owned, but I want
the 50 plus
one.
Yeah,
50 plus. What I was trying to get at,
Adam, you're lightweight, mate.
Yeah, you're not. Yeah, you're not like the Millicent Nahl.
I was just trying to get at the fact that I don't know that there are some people, and they may be that vocal majority Adam talks about, that it wouldn't have mattered what information had come across in that meeting. Oh, they still won't be persuadable.
No, I mean, I think that there are some people that just for whatever reason they don't like fan ownership. They want to just be like every other club, losing 6 million a year. So I mean, having
having no say over their club, and just basically being a customer ripped off and not treated rubbishly.
Sorry, I didn't mean to start him off just yet. okay, let's start with Craig Cope, because I think the first thing to say, what's really important, is immediately shooting down these rumours about people being out of contract and being told we will not renew contracts at the end of the season. This is not true. And I think what is frustrating, if you've got to look back on previous seasons, what happens is a lot of times people are not offered contracts until in the summer. And the reason being is, A, we don't know what league we're going to be in. And B, their agents are probably looking for other options anyhow. So it's a load of baloney. You've taken something and you've just flown with it. And I'm not entirely sure what agenda people have on some of the rumours that are spreading around. The other one was saying that JJ is looking for a way out. Again, I was informed that that's not true either. So I don't know what people's agenda is. I can only assume it's destabilising the club. And trying to force us into a situation of selling it on for whatever reason, so it's not particularly helpful. There was some other rumor that I saw, Mark, you'd sent round as well, that something had come through about the academy, and I think Michael Hamilton directly responded to that as well. So people are seeing some malicious things that are put, or rumors that are put out online, that the club are seeing, the staff are seeing, the parents of the players in the academy are seeing as well. So it's like,
and potential investors are seeing as well. Yeah. Which is actually why Michael Hamilton and I've just seen another WhatsApp while we're recording that's confirming that it was Michael Hamilton. It wasn't just someone pretending to be him. His point was, if anyone connected with the club or wanting to be connected to the club sees that type of information and sees that type of comment by a fan, then that's not going to be something that is going to come across in a positive way. And I completely agree with that. And I've had instances myself where, you know, people have said, you know, you shouldn't make negative comments because you know, that's not going to reflect well. And I entirely appreciate that is fair comment overall.
So I just want to make sure we're breaking those two things down. So the first thing about the players not leaving, this was dismissed in the room. Then there was another rumor that was put, or another thing that's put out on social media, and that was dismissed by Michael Hamilton. The two different things, but the point remains the same. If you start saying these sort of things, it's going to have a negative impact.
Yeah, but also I was going to say, I think to Mark's point there is that I think as fans, as owners, we can be critical of decisions that the club make, and we can be critical of those things. But making stuff up, that is negative, is going to have a massively damaging effect to us. And I think we've said that over the last few weeks.
Yeah,
that we are not, and I don't care what other podcast people think. I think we have been critical of decisions of the club at various points as owners, because that's what we should be.
Yeah.
We should be critical friends of the club, but we don't spread negative things that we don't actually have evidence of.
Yeah, malicious. We don't spread malicious rumours. We can have opinions on tactics, on subs. I know one of us has a real issue about subs, and certain players who played for us. One of them who played for us recently.
And equally, we're also not any kind of mouthpiece of anyone to be able to say this is the thing. You know, we're not drinking any Kool-Aid, as they say.
No. So anyhow, so it was interesting. So Craig was able to shoot that down straight away. I think some of the contentious things that he said that, you know, I think in his mind, and correct me, Mark, because I might have missed this bit, that he was quite keen to keep Harbottle and Orsi.
Yes.
Which I was just like, I found that
possibly
peculiar.
More Harbottle than Orsi. I think he gave the distinct impression that he would rather have kept an additional centre-back in the squad.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense, because if we're playing three at the back, then realistically you need five centre-backs.
Yeah.
But if you consistently play three centre-backs and they stay fit, as by and large ours have, then you end up with the situation which happened in the first half of the season. Yeah. The Harbottle unfortunately found himself frozen out.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing that was quite interesting was that apparently we missed out on a defender, and he's actually come out with more with money left over, which is incredible, as we'll come up to anyhow.
Yeah, he didn't say whether that was more than 50p, but you know.
No, yeah, but that was interesting. But it was, you know, but he was. Again, he was very positive. He was saying about how much he loves being at the club, which was fantastic. Then James Woodruff came on, and I've never really seen him around the club. He's been one of the more, you know, we've had quite.
But I thought the rumor was that he'd like got quit, fired, left. So what's he doing? Oh wow, he's there. Weird.
That rumor was just completely made up to fuel an agenda.
Yeah, there you
possibly.
Go. Yeah, but he came on, and I thought he presented really well, very straight talking, answered questions really well. This just proves how insane League One football is. We've got the 13th highest revenue in League One. The club has generated, and this is brilliant, through the Don's ticks, that way that it's worked. The club has now generated 30k in season ticket holders donating their tickets back to the club because it's so easy to do. And yet then, you know, going into other things, someone asked the question, and again, this is a contentious point, which we could talk about. Are we talking to Chelsea ladies about them coming to Plough Lane? Now, He admitted that we are having those conversations just because our financial situation is what it is, that we're having to have those conversations. I think personally that any other option would be better really than having Chelsea. I mean, there's damage to the pitch. What does it do to London Broncos? And also the idea of having Chelsea branding of any sort at our club just feels slightly wrong.
Matt, we've talked about this. You know, I'm very anti this because, you know, we've had Ashley Hinks on here, right? And I'd say we're a champion of the Wimbledon women's team, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that is it. Exactly. If there is a team that should be playing at Plough Lane, that are a women's team, it should be our women's team. We should not be having Chelsea, of all teams, playing on our ground when we have our own women's team. That's where I'm at. I know it happened at King's Meadow, but this is our ground now. This is our home, and I don't think it's appropriate. I realise there's cash involved. I realise all the rest of it, but I'd rather have, as Mark calls them, egg chasers on our pitch than I would have Chelsea women on our pitch.
I don't call them egg chasers.
No, Martin
calls them.
Yeah, Mark loves egg chasing. But it's one of the reasons we couldn't record yesterday evening, because Mark was watching some egg chasing.
Rugby union is a sport in which England might actually win something. So, funnily enough, it's...
You know, how the heck have you got him talking about blooming rugby, for goodness sake? I agree. I agree with Niall. I'm not as anti-Chelsea as everyone else on this podcast, whatever. But... I think we should invest in our own women's team to be more at Plough Lane. I've said that before numerous times, and that's more important to me as a long-term prospect for sustainability than a short-term injection of potentially having Chelsea's women play with us. I understand there's finances involved, but I think we've got to, as much as people are panicking, we should We should think long term, and long term,
Yeah.
we should encourage sustainability of our own women's team, and that's
Yeah.
playing at Plough Lane more often.
Yeah. No, I heartily agree. I mean, I think the context of this, which James spoke about, was picked up by the board, is that, we're 4 million off the average playing budget in League One. We're 60 million off the highest spending club in League One.
Which is Cardiff.
And I swear, if you say Cardiff one more time, Mark, see, I'm having to call you Martin now.
I'm just stating a fact. And the question is, whoever comes down from the Championship, are they likely to be in
Yeah,
having
in
some
that
resources
situation,
as
exactly.
that club from South Wales? Probably not.
Two new women's stats.
But the other thing to say is that the average League One owner are subsidising their club to the tune of 6 million quid a year, which is insane. Bear in mind that we've got the 13th highest income revenue in the league, and yet we are second to bottom in terms of financial resources because these owners are prepared to put in 6 million quid a year. I mean, it's just unsustainable. Niall, I mean, you were saying to me, how does this work? Do owners want to be doing this?
Yeah, basically the structure is that if your club gets promoted, it's instantly worth more. So you have a whole range of different kind of owners in football. The gambling owners are the ones that cause the biggest problem because the gambling owners are the ones that will do that and go up and then sell. So that means that we can't compete against them because they're basically speculating massively. And if it goes wrong, it can go horrendously wrong, as we've known. That's where your clubs go bust. Then you have the kind of people who see it as a plaything, the kind of like multi-billionaire fans, and they're happy to lose money. They are actually very few, far in between. So those are the kind of two major owners. The ones that I think we're to be slightly worried about are the kind of American owners that are coming in who fall into the speculate to accumulate group. Those are the ones that are skewing the system at the moment. And this is a bit where the financial regulation does need to come in and change a bit and say, right, well, actually, why should you be getting money from a distribution deal if you're like already overspending and skewing the system? And it's like we need to roll that back. And I think that's where we need to start having some serious questions about how football operates.
Yeah, we'll come on to this a little bit more when we chat about the meet the board bit. I guess the final big bit from me here, Mark, you can jump in if I've missed anything from James. But I thought the final big bit was that, and Adam, this will be of interest to you, is the videos, those sort of end of season videos that were happening. Well, apparently they're sort of like being used as kind of like a carrot. To entice people in to make a documentary, and there was positive talk, or it felt positive, that this could be used to make a to hopefully have a documentary. Now I'm interested to know whether this documentary would focus on just last season, or would be a more of a sort of like story to date. But it felt like it would be a documentary slash film. But the idea it felt like of those two videos was to sort of like get some interest out there. And again, James was very much of the opinion that if we can start to generate this global interest in our club, that's what could potentially bring some more sponsorship or some revenue into the club. But yeah, so that's an interesting thing. So Adam, that documentary will happen at some point.
I'm waiting. I'm waiting. I'll pay for it. Just put it
Yeah.
out there. Come
You will pay for it. Not the whole thing, mate, because it could cost a few quid
on. True.
to get out, mate.
Well, if I understood correctly, the people who had done the video were also recording on Wednesday as well, so to potentially include that, unless I misunderstood that. But there were two other notes that I made that I've just checked my own notes on about James Woodworth's bits. One was he was asked directly if remaining in League One is worth it financially, to which his quote was, because I wrote this literally down at the time, we are not getting involved in an arms race, which goes back to the point that that Matt's just been talking about, relating specifically, for example, to how much the family who own Port Vale have put into to their League One lack of progress this season. And the other thing which has been discussed on social media since then, and we cannot avoid, is the fact that the average season ticket price increase
Yes, it's
for
going
next
up.
season is going to be 13%.
Yep, it's going up by 30. Yeah, and that is a good point. Although I thought James made a very he made a very good point as well, saying that in actual fact they made changes to season ticket prices before we knew what league we were going to be in last year. So you know this happens. So I mean, I think people some of the fans were going, "Well, why are you making this decision now, not knowing what league we're going to be in?"
You
But
have to.
you have to.
And we're also not by any means we haven't put them on for sale yet, and a number of other clubs have already put theirs on sale.
So I think again, there's a lot of sort of like, you know, oh, we're having to do this because we need cash flow. I mean, I think every club wants to do that. It's not unique. I think the worst one, decision wise, was when you put your season tickets on sale and then decide to sell your club and move up to Midlands
Yeah,
in
I mean,
2001 might be
indeed.
the worst.
Speaking as a genuine boy who grew up in Wimbledon and therefore obviously went to follow his local team, I know that it is not in any way, and I'm not talking, just me, and this is my personal circumstance. But football is not cheap, and the prices of tickets, whether they were a 13% increase for next season or otherwise, are not necessarily proportionate. You know, it's not, I don't know whether you'd compare it to going to the opera or going to the cinema or whatever it may be. You know, I mean, for example, without going into a whole geopolitical discussion, there are lots of other things you could spend 30 odd quid on for a couple of hours entertainment. Equally, I bought tickets, for example, to go to a play in Kingston recently, starring Michael Sheen, and because Michael Sheen's in it, the cheapest tickets, are right at the back of the stalls or about 35 quid each as well. For a couple of hours' performance. So, football fans are, whether they are based in Southwest London, Wimbledon, or they are based watching Dorking Wanderers or Truro City or whatever league they're in, the prices of the tickets are not necessarily proportionate. But, and this was also mentioned, football clubs at low League One and League Two level increasingly will naturally enough be reliant on the revenue. I think it was stated that 30% of the revenue we get in as a club is from our ticket revenue. Whereas in the Premier League, it's
It's
almost
like,
entirely irrelevant.
yeah, exactly.
I'm more concerned that Mark said, as the genuine person who grew up in Wimbledon.
No, what I'm trying to say is
excuse me,
people
all
will
of
be
us
priced
were.
out.
No,
People
I
will
mean,
be
I
priced
think,
out of buying tickets for next season.
Matt,
That
it's
is horrible.
25. It's 25. I think on average, someone was saying it's 25 quid a game per game. It's what it's
Yeah,
going to
I
work
wouldn't. I'm
out.
just saying,
So it's not.
I wouldn't be doing all this ridiculous
Yeah.
travelling if I wasn't genuinely born and brought
Yeah,
up
I
in
know. I'm
Wimbledon.
sorry. I'm not trying to set myself out as
No.
a.
I know what
What
you're
it's
saying.
like.
You're saying
Yeah.
that obviously, if you grow up in Wimbledon, you've got more, possibly more disposable income and whatever. That's sort
Possibly,
of it. Yeah. But
but equally at the same time, there will be people from Mitcham or Tooting or other areas around Southeast
they can't.
London
Yeah, it can't. Yeah.
that w either can't afford it right now or will not be able to afford it moving
Okay.
forward.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
realistically, just look at economics. And again, I don't in any means want to sound like a, white middle class bloke that's got too much money, because I'm definitely not that, as you guys know.
Yeah.
But what is the case is that we have a stadium of just shy of 9,000, where we're having to restrict the amount of away fans that come in for the Reading game tomorrow. Reading wanted more than 920 tickets that we've given them and would have been able to sell them. They're taking 2,000 and 3,000 to other areas, but we took 1,700 to Reading. We can't give them 1,700 in return because our ground isn't big enough. If therefore some people who buy tickets right now for Wimbledon cannot afford it, I would hope, I don't know, and I'm not in any way trying to be assumptive, but I would hope that there are other people who can afford it who would come in to replace them.
I mean, and I think we are looking after our younger people, and there are discounted tickets as well. But you know, it is a rise. Let's not get away from it, and it is gonna bite.
And we live in straightened economic times, you know. Everybody knows that, and no one's trying to avoid that, you know.
Okay, right. So, and that was great from James, but I thought then the board came on. The other board, previously known as the PLC board, the club board. And I think the one thing that people are locked into, and I just find this really, it's just like really tedious. It's like there's a slide that shows the cash flow, and you've probably all seen it. Anyone listening has probably seen it, and and the arrow points down and down and down. And I think what is, and then we go, then it goes into debt. And it looks out of context, it looks pretty terrifying. But I think the whole thing about it is that gives a picture of what happens if we do nothing. That's what happens. Now, the thing is, we are doing something. Things are happening. One of the most exciting things is that we're in discussion with eight potential investors. Most of these are sort of like consortiums. They're not single people. They're consortium people. There was someone mentioned this in the room, which was quite interesting. A rumor going around that one of those consortiums could be led by an ex-player,
That
but
wasn't denied.
no, it wasn't denied. But the club, but the but the but I think the most important thing to say is the club have signed NDAs with most of the people, which is
And
why
then
you can't say who it is.
after they stated that, then people were trying to get them to give information about who these groups were. And at which point the rest of us just sitting near where I
I
was,
would have a
towards the back of the
very,
room.
very good idea who that ex-player
But
was, by
they
the
were
way.
trying to point out, it's an NDA. Do you not understand what an
Yeah,
NDA is? Non-disclosure agreement. You cannot
exactly.
say anything about
Yeah.
anything.
Oh no, it was great. It was quite funny. And they kept looking at the lawyers. But and then I think someone from the floor asked, said that people were quite excited about this, and they'd heard it on some podcast, that they were quite excited about. Angus was quite excited about the investors he was talking to, and Angus said, "Yeah, it's the Same Old Wombles podcast, and you should listen to their Christmas episode, which gives a whole thing of the season." So it was quite pleasing to get a shout out. Thank you very much, Angus. Thank you very much to the DTB
Yeah, and also
for
we're not
that.
investors, but just to be clear, we're
Yeah,
not on the
we're not one of the consortium
we
groups, you
haven't
guys.
signed any NDAs, we haven't got any money.
If people were relying on us, that'd be a really bad thing. So anyhow, but that's interesting. But to make that happen, to sort of like make the potential investment happen, it would need to go down to 50 plus one. And they are going to be sending out another vote, so that will go to vote again in the week beginning the 23rd of March. I mean, there is still concerns that if we go under 75%, they won't, that could potentially cause a problem. But if we don't go down to 50 plus one, there's a strong possibility of us going into an administration. So the big question is, Niall, how are you going to vote, man? Saved.
So,
On
like,
the spot.
being that, right, everybody knows that where I stand on this. And I had a really good chat because I was with Angus on Tuesday night. Because Angus, we managed, Fair Game had, we run the all party parliamentary group of football, and we had the chair and CEO of the regulator in the room. And so I was with Angus, was there, were there to ask some really important questions about how the regulation is going to hit AFC Wimbledon, which is actually really important. And he's on the back of that, he's got the one-to-one meetings with him, which I think is brilliant. It did mean I had a good chance to chat with Angus for a long time about that. And the first thing he started with is that how immensely happy the board are, and they talk about it as a big success, is the fact that Adam Proctor is now a 50 plus one person, and they put that as a massive success of like how they've achieved it. If they can get Adam persuaded, they've done that. So I did say to Angus, yeah, you've done a brilliant job, you've persuaded Adam, and I now realize I'm outnumbered on the Same Old Wombles podcast, and they do know that I am, like, the day they get me to be a 50 plus one is like, then the whole there's never going to be a problem with anything ever. Where Angus was going from it is that and I think there was mentioned there that the majority of those, if not all of those investors, are all after two things. They're after the 50 plus one vote going through, because, and they also want a 25% share themselves. is basically where they're all at.
Yep.
Now, for those who want extra investment and for those who are there, then on the basis of that, there is obviously one way to vote. And I get that and I understand that. I am a kind of person of a principle, and I've always said I don't like the idea of kind of the 75%, because when you go below 75%, and particularly if one person has a 25% share, they can block motions going through. And if they can block motions going through, that means they can basically continually block until they get what they want proposed. That's my fear. And I know that people will say, right, we're only going to sell to nice people, and that's fine. I suspect the investors we've got are all really nice, really honourable, good people. I have no doubt. I trust the DTB on that. I really do. The issue that arises is who do they sell to, and who do they sell on to after that? Because once it's gone, it's gone. That's where I'm at. Having said that, I do totally get everybody else's views and everybody else's concerns about it, and I can see how people who are going to be attracted by doing 50 plus one, and I get that. I'm not going to change the way I particularly vote, but if it goes to 50 plus one, I'm not going to be crying massive tears as much as I would have done. So that's if Angus and the DTB want some sort of success, is the fact that Niall might not be crying massive tears if 50 plus one goes through.
I mean, yeah, no. I mean, I've got Mark. Let me come to you, but I just wanted to say that, there is the real possibility that if we don't do this, we could go into administration.
I still go through the fact that there's still that extra bit of revenue that's never been sold. So
But I think, but it just feels like it's not attractive at that amount. It's just not attractive.
I get the whole argument. I understand all of that, and I know where I'm at as
Yeah.
well.
All right.
So I get it.
Mark.
The only thing I was going to add to that, which came out of the meeting again, was relating to the kind of questions that the potential investors have been actually posing themselves. One of which was basically how much could I get, or how much would they expect to get? I'm trying to find my notes, but there was one particular comment that actually, first of all, to Niall's point, yeah, here we go, I found it. Investors in the mix would want more than the 15% that is currently available. Potentially would want more than 25%, but actually, even if we brought 50.01 into place, the maximum we could sell is 23.6. Now, does that give a safeguard in itself? I don't know, but that at least indicates that there is a chunk more that can be sold. And you would hope, obviously, if you are selling that percentage, that the revenue that is gained from that would be chunky as well.
And Adam.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say the same thing about the 23% thing, but also I was going to note that I strongly suspect that the investors that we are talking to are not in for a short-term game, and that as much as we may worry about who they may sell on to, I actually think they will be investing in us and investing in what we can do, whether that's in terms of increasing the stadium. We're selling out all the time, all that kind of stuff. So I hear Niall's nervousness, but I don't think we need to worry about who those investors might sell on to for quite a long time, actually. And again, we will continue to be majority owners, so I suspect
I
we can have
guess,
a lot of say in that. So yeah.
I guess that's the other thing is that is there any clauses or anything that goes says if you're looking to sell beyond, you've got to come back to the DTB first, and we have first refusal, and then we are in the
Well,
mix.
we will have, because
I mean,
we'll still be the majority owners.
yeah,
So
but I
still.
mean, it's just like, but like making sure who they sell on to. So I think is another thing, and also there's, we've got there is the what's it called? The t director's test. So I'm assuming that someone would have to. Not that I'm saying it's been that strong at the moment and it needs beefing up. But that was interesting. I think the other thing that's interesting to put in other things in context in terms of finances is the results of the survey to bondholders came out last was announced, and so it now looks like repayments in 2027, which were going to be around 3 million. are now going to be around 1.5, maybe less, because people are either are looking to either roll their bonds over, or to change their bonds into equity.
Surprise, surprise, it's not as bad as the fearmongers would have out, that actually the people who have put that money in are happy to continue to leave their money there. Wow,
So that,
surprise, surprise.
and that's less, isn't it, Mark? That's less than than in 20, the last time we had to pay money out.
Yes, it is. It's about 100,000 less. And actually, what was fascinating about that, and well done to Michelle Little or whoever else has been involved in chasing up those bondholders, and obviously great thanks should go to the individual bondholders themselves for their generosity. But those surveys and those questions have been asked of them in the last 7 to 10 days or so. So that is really relatively fresh information. And I think it was 77%, she said, that had actually responded up to this point. So potentially it could be more. So it could be more that would need to be repaid, but it also could be more that is able to be rolled over or not having to be repaid. And therefore, that 3 million plus isn't necessarily quite such a mountain that it previously would have appeared to be. Still means there's that obviously a chunk of revenue that needs to be found in the next 13, 14 months or so, but not quite such a big chunk.
And I get and just coming on to the last point, certainly the last point I think Niall could contribute to, is that one of the questions was asked about the any risk posed by the regulator. And Niall, you might want to come into this, but I mean, I guess the, one of the things which is good news is that the club have got a one-to-one meeting, as you said, with the CEO of the regulator. But
Well,
what's the issues?
the issue is about having the funds available to cover liabilities, which makes sense about whether you're financially secure. Now, obviously, as a fan-owned club, we don't have like all those reserves that other clubs could do. So having a guarantee that you're able to cover if you whatever is much harder for us than it is for some wealthy individuals. Now, what came out of the conversations on the APPG meeting, on Tuesday, was that they will look at a case by case situation, and that risk will come into play, which means actually we are not risky because we're fan owned and therefore less likely to pull our, well, actually really difficult for us to pull our investment out. Because there's so many of us, so it's actually difficult for us to put our investment out. Whereas as a richer single owner, there is a significantly higher risk that they can walk away. We actually can't really walk away, which makes us less of a risk. So there is talk about putting exemptions in a whole range of different things that would protect us. And that is one of the things that hopefully, well, I know Angus will raise in that one-to-one, which from a fair game perspective, I'm absolutely delighted that we were able to facilitate that conversation and make it happen, because that is a risk and it is something that was raised. So having potential exemptions put in for fan-owned clubs could be a real big game changer for us, because at the moment, you know, the reason for the regulator was supposed to protect the heritage of fans and the kind of fan ownership, if you like, and it hadn't quite done that, and it was well spotted by people smarter than me, and I hope that we're on a path now to get all of those concerns rectified. And I know Angus will bat hard for us on that. And I think the noises from the regulator on Tuesday night were really positive. So I think we will be all right on that score.
That's so cool because I never thought about the fact that we are harder to walk away. So that's yeah,
That
that's
risk element is the bit that needs to come into play, because it's like that makes us actually a more secure and viable option, and therefore a whole range of things about whether we should be more high re rewarded and less penalised because of that, because we're more of a, we're actually a much more stable ownership structure than the other 90
that's so
clubs
cool.
that
What it does,
are fan-owned.
and now what it does, obviously, if it puts in those sort of like safeguards, it puts those protection for fan-owned clubs, then it starts making fan ownership more attractive.
Yeah,
So it could be that other clubs are getting to a situation rather than, you know, Morecambe or Sheffield Wednesday looking to sell to another owner, they might or start to come together and go, in actual fact, we're more protected if we're fan owned.
certainly through the fair game ether that I've been involved in, I'm aware of a number of clubs in the Football League that want to be fan owned. Because their owners are see themselves as custodians, and they know that their time on the earth is limited, and they'd rather have it handed over to the fans to make sure it's secure going forward. So there are clubs out there. So what we need to do is working on those exemptions and stuff that make fan ownership more attractive. And also I think if we do that sort of stuff comes into legislation, then clubs like ourselves will be able to find it much easier to get cheap loans, because it'll be like you're loaning to a stable ownership structure, which is not the case with so many other places.
Yeah, that was actually one thing which wasn't mentioned at all in all of the financial discussions at the meeting on Wednesday, was whether or not there's any opportunity in terms of financial arrangements, with
I'm
lending
aware
out to
there's a
banks at
loan
levels.
outstanding in there that we could take up, but we haven't.
Yeah, I
Yes.
think there is. Yeah, there's a loan that's there. I mean, this is. I think this is all great. I mean, it's kind of like we've kind of. Those are the key points of the meeting. We might have missed some bits and bobs, but just to say, I understand that hopefully the video of it will go live at some point soon. I know that we obviously put some stuff out on socials as well, so you can go back and have a look at what we did. I think I know Graham Stacey's put some stuff out on X as well, which gives us sort of his feedback, his running commentary of the night. So that's there as well. I think Stuart Deakins of 9 years podcast fame has put up a blog as well. I haven't read it, so but yeah, so there's going to be other places to do it, and I think that this will still rumble on. I think we'll probably talk about it in our next podcast, which will be out shortly. We like to sort of like concertina them. The other big talking point just before I leave us all is the movement of the Northampton game.
Matt, can I jump in on this? Because I have to go, and I'm happy for
Which
you to
is
continue.
absolutely, I mean, it's infuriating. So they've moved it from the Saturday the 6th, or which was meant to be a 3 o'clock kickoff, and it was designated as a worldwide One Balls weekend. So we got people from all over the world to come to Wimbledon. It's now been moved not to the same day, but to the Sunday at 12 o'clock.
They're well
Right,
known time for playing
I am
football.
absolutely livid about this. I think it's absolutely disgrace, and I think that ultimately, and I've been speaking. I actually spoke to a few people today about it. And like Zap was obviously one of those people I spoke to. And my view is kind of fuck it. Let's play the game at 3 o'clock on Saturday. That's when all our people are there. Let's do that, and let's put two fingers up to the whole of Sky doing this kind of stupid moving of games. I've spoken to a few other fans groups, a few other fan people today, and all of them are absolutely effed off about this happening repeatedly and fans being treated as second-class citizens. And that includes representatives, senior representatives from Level Playing Field, Women in Football, some disability groups, some other fan clubs, other fan groups. I've had email conversations with the Daily Mirror about it, and they're all kind of going like, at some point, somebody's going to have to make a stand. And if we're going to get fined for doing it, I honestly think there will be organisations that will chip in and pay for that fine if we make a stand, because so many people are hacked off with this sort of thing happening.
I
And
think
we've got all these fans flying in from all over the place. It's an absolute disgrace. And I think we
it's
should
a
just.
disgrace. And we told Sky that this was what's happening. I think it's a farce. I think if it had been on the same day, if it had been moved to Saturday at 12:30, the same day, we'd have been annoyed. But at least people are coming on that day. The fact they've moved it to the Sunday at 12 o'clock, I mean, is it that important for people to be watching Wimbledon versus Northampton
We are
Town
going to,
on
and
12
as a
o'clock?
club, we are going to lose money, because an early kickoff on that is always gets less cash, right? Always has done. It is just absolute farce, stupid. I fundamentally disagree with it. I hope that the fan base get behind opposing it. I hope the DTB say, "Let's screw it. Let's do the game on a on a. Let's play the game on
My
Saturday."
understanding is, and we will hold people accountable to this, but my understanding is that the club are looking to do something. Certainly the DTB are looking to do something. If not, we're just going to have to come down to the other fan groups to make a stand. But
There are also
I
lots
think
of
it
other
I
people
think
involved.
There are lots of, I mean, I think it
Like
does sound right.
Northampton themselves.
I know, but they
And
have
the
to be.
police and so on.
I know, but come on, Mark. I mean, it's ridiculous. We've told them.
Oh, I agree with you all 100%, and I back up everything Niall says.
No, I agree with
Niall's
Niall.
about to disappear.
I know Niall's got to disappear, but and he can listen to the rest of the podcast on his own. But yeah, obviously we need to get the backing of Northampton. We need to get the rearrange, or not rearrange, but ensure that we have the police, etc., for a Saturday game. But I think, like Niall says, if we do this the right way, I don't think it will actually cost us anything. I think there are so many fans, there's so many groups that will realise this is an insane scenario, because as a club, we clearly went back to Sky Sports and the EFL and said, we don't want to move this game because we've already arranged for international fans to come over. We've set this weekend up, etc. Please don't move it, right? And they've obviously responded and said, no, we're moving it anyway. But there's no Premier League games on that weekend. There's no Scottish Premier League games on that weekend either. So what are Sky doing? I
They're
can only
filling their
imagine.
content is the
Yeah,
simple
no,
answer.
exactly. That's all I can imagine is they are basically trying
Yeah,
to basically
but of
ensure
all the
they've got all
games,
these schedules.
there are
Yeah, but
so many
there
games. There are so many games going. There are so many League One
No, I
games
know, but
going on.
that's what's even
Why
worse
pick?
about it.
Why
That's what's
pick
even
this one?
worse about it is there are loads of games going on, and we've gone back and said, don't move our game because we've made arrangements according to for the international weekend, and yet they've said no. But there are loads of other games going on. I mean, I don't understand moving a game to Sunday. I don't understand moving a game to Sunday to midday. It's annoying for me to even get there for a midday on a Saturday, let alone midday on a Sunday. And I'm travelling from the bottom of England. I'm not travelling from around the world, which is something we absolutely said. So, I mean, we know that various members of the Don's Trust board, thankfully, listen to our podcast. And I think we are pretty strong, and we have already said
But I
to
think
our
they're already. You can see in the statement they're pissed off. So, and I think, and I think, and I think, and I'm hoping that we will go back and they will see sense and make a change. I mean, you know,
They've actually got.
it would have been annoyed. It would have been annoying if they have done this anyhow. But the fact that we told them that this is a special weekend for us, it's in our calendar, and they moved it regardless of that, shows how little they care.
Oh,
How
and the...
little they care about the fans.
absolutely right. This is also backed up by a separate arrangement, which doesn't involve us, but it's just worth mentioning to emphasize how ludicrous the whole thing is. We talked about the situation with Swindon and the Virtue Trophy. Beforehand, they've now been thrown out of the Virtue Trophy, I think correctly, because they did essentially break the rules. And the EFL have now told Plymouth, who were the team who'd qualified and were waiting to see whether they were going to play Luton or Swindon,
Swindon.
they've now told the Luton, who've been reinstated, that they actually need to play the game on a certain date, which I think is the 24th of February. And they've already got a league game that day. So they've basically been told, I think it's Rotherham, they were due to be playing on that date. They're now moving a league game. They've been told to move a league game in preference to a Virtue Trophy game.
I mean, the whole
And
thing.
they protested. Naturally enough, there are three clubs involved here. The innocent club that is now not playing against either Luton or Plymouth in this regard, and obviously the other two clubs involved. But they've given sort of notice to be able to do it, and it's an away game at Plymouth, so it's a reasonable place, a reasonable journey to do as well at a short notice. But they don't care. And
No.
the worst thing about this is we're talking about the season ticket increase and so on. How many games, even at our level, at League One level, are played and have been played, will have been played now on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock? That's when you watch football. 3 o'clock Saturday
Yeah.
afternoon,
Hello.
7:45 Tuesday, end of.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And also, because the other consequence of the game being moved to Sunday at 12 is that our game on Tuesday against Blackpool has been pushed back to the Wednesday. I mean, the whole thing is an absolute joke. And I really hope that the DTB and the club do something about this. I mean, I would, and if it goes ahead, then I think people don't understand that.
I'm not.
We're a
If it
pro
goes
we're
ahead,
basically we're
if
a
it goes
protest
ahead,
club.
I'm not
We're
going, and I'm
a
not
protest
reselling my
club.
ticket.
We're a
It's
protest
like,
club. We're a protest club. That's how we've come up. We've put something from the Phoenix. So if they're going to do that, then I'm pretty sure that on that Sunday, the Sky people there and whatever's going on are going to come in for such a shitty time. It's going to be such a lot of stick, and we will make a real big fuss. They do not want that. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. But I mean, I'm hoping that we can move it back.
No, Matt, I totally agree. I think if it does go ahead, I'm not going to attend for starters. And if I can figure out, I think I said on the WhatsApp chat, I'm going to figure out some way to attach something to my seat that is in protest of what's happening. I would do that, and that would be a small gesture compared
What
to
is
those
your
who want to
problem? You can get the
re-protest.
9:25 from Southampton Central. That'll
I
get
know
you to
what
Wembley
train
at 11:19. What's the
I
problem?
already yeah, I already looked up what train I can get, and I can get there. But I don't want to get there.
One change at Woking. There's no rail replacement bus service or anything.
Hey,
look,
well, not at the moment.
I am joking.
Not at the moment, Mark.
No, I know you're
Listen,
joking, Mark. We
listen.
stood out, we stood outside. We stood outside a game that was happening in protest, and
Yeah.
I think we can do even more for a stupid rearrangement from Skies when we told them really legitimate reasons as to why we don't want it to move, and they've got plenty of games they could choose from, and I understand that would also not be great for other fans who want to go to games for sure, but I think we had more of a reason to not be moved, and they should have said, oh, actually, we'll go and have another look at
Yeah.
this, who we could pick
Yeah.
from, and we'll make some decisions then.
Yeah. I know exactly. Right, chaps. So listen, we've got our heckles up here. But
Can
listen.
I just throw in one really amusing stat?
Okay, yeah, of
There's
course you
loads of
can.
stuff people can look up online about, how much better our away record is than our
Yeah.
home record, for example. But I haven't got that one to hand. But what I have got, and thanks to Mike Overill for posting this on social media, the goal at Port Vale ended our run of 24 consecutive shots off target, and apparently was the second shot on target out of our last 32.
Brilliant.
Both of which have been scored. That's the goal, the header by Brown at Rotherham, and obviously the goal by Maycock. So,
Yeah. Really need to
most
get
amusing overall.
more shots on target. Well, anyhow, chaps, listen, I look forward to seeing you at Plough Lane for our game, which kicks off at 3:01. The reason it kicks off at 3:01 is that it's about taking a minute to think about that. A minute can save a people's life. It's a heart, It's about looking after your heart. I can't remember exactly
Which
what
is
the
the
charity's
campaign
about.
that just look up Heart Staying Alive and Vinnie Jones, because he did a campaign.
Every minute matters. It's about
Every minute matters.
resuscitation.
Thank you. So that's it. That's why it's kicking off at 3:01. But I will look forward to seeing you there. Thank you very much to my friend Niall Cooper, who's disappeared. Thank you to our really worked up Dr. Adam Proctor. Have a lie down, mate. And to the stat man, Talbot Lewis.
Always a
I'm
pleasure,
Matt
mate.
Cooper. We're the same old Wobbles. We're back as always.
I've been standing here since many years ago. You've been under my skin for as long as I have known. We traveled away and we stand in the rain and the cold. Take the rough with the smooth.